You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, brought to you by iWoka, flexible loans built for small businesses. iWoka.co.uk. Today, we're in Loudun-Vienne.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Luchon, Richard, at the foot of the Périssaude and the foot of Super Bannière, two famous climbs from Tour de France history. The Périssaude, of course, they came over today, but went down into Loudonville instead of coming down to Luchon. This is normally a fixture on the Tour de France route, isn't it?
We took a little detour, didn't we? And Nielsen Pallas tried to join us here for an afternoon drink on the terrace at the hotel here, because he went straight on where he should have gone right.
We drove over the Port de Balès this afternoon, didn't we, on the race route. A really stunning climb all the way up, and a lovely descent. Mm. Absolutely lovely descent. Mm. I'd have loved to have ridden that.
Mm, a real pudding descent.
Well, we had after last night's conversation about Lionel's love of downhill cycling and him christening himself the pudding. The pudding, you said you were going for the pudding jersey.
I said I was wearing the pudding coloured jersey.
Jersey for the best descender. One of our listeners and good friends, Moyin Islam, suggested the flying, well, he said the flying descending pudding. The flying pudding is what we settled on.
That's been settled now, hasn't it?
That relates back to the nickname that you came up with for Simon Yates, the flying black pudding.
That's right. Because he's from, well, the Yates brothers are both from Bury. Bury, very famous for its black pudding, excellent black pudding. And, well, that whole story's been covered in print and audio many times. But I don't mind being called the flying pudding.
I'll tell you what, I kind of admire you, because, I mean, being afraid of heights and not heights, as I tend to say, I wouldn't be very comfortable riding down from, well, the Port de Balès, the descent, and I didn't see a lot of it because I was always looking, on the mountainside and not in the ravine side.
You were finding the drop a little bit intimidating. Yeah. It did really fall away, didn't it, at points on that descent.
Exactly. These other parts I avoided. I was looking elsewhere anyway.
But I think in honour of your downhill cycling abilities, Lionel, you set a challenge for Cycling Podcast listeners next year at the Tour de France to write your name on the descents. You want to see Lionel Burney, the flying pudding, all the way down some of the big descents in the Tour de France.
Perfect, perfect. It would make my tour if that actually
happened.
You
would blush a lot.
I would. The
aerial pictures from the helicopter.
Lionel Burney, the flying pudding, catching that on the road. Well, brilliant.
The UCI commissaires would probably spot, reddening in the Cycling Podcast team.
You're reddening just at the idea of it.
I am a bit.
Well, listen, it was an interesting stage today, and we weren't really sure. I suppose we've been waiting for a showdown between the GC contenders, and I think we saw a few interesting signs today, both from a team and an individual perspective, and we saw a great battling performance from Adam Yates, didn't we, to keep the yellow jersey. Let's hear what his DS, Matt White, had to say at the start this morning about what he thought would happen today.
Regardless of what happens in the first few hours of the day, it's going down on the Périssaude, that's for sure. Whether it's for the stage win or whether it's to try to isolate key guys, but it'll be going down on the Périssaude. Because if you can get a gap, it's very hard to chase it on a descent. Someone like Roglic, if he goes over the top with 5 or 5 seconds, good luck trying to catch him. So I think it's a very good springboard. No, Adam doesn't sit up. No, he doesn't sit up. He's too proud for that. He would have been in the same place. He would have been in the same place regardless of what jersey he's in. He's in a good place. He found the place where he needed to be in the final yesterday. Our guys actually let him down in the final, but he took care of business on his own.
I mean, he's obviously going very well. He seemed to not have any problems yesterday when some guys did.
Yeah, look, he can handle a bike, he can read a race. He made adjusts, and that's all he needed to do. But, look, nothing's changed. The illness that he had before the Dauphiné, it's put him back a fair bit. And like I said, we rode him very conservative in the Dauphiné. He's come out of there well, and he's building nicely. We haven't really seen that big showdown yet between the big guys, really. We're going to see it on the Périssaude today, and we're going to see who's here to play and who's not.
Well, Matt White was kind of right there. We did see some real skirmishes on the climb of the Périssaud. We saw the yellow jersey going backwards and forwards, and then, you know, actually being on the offensive when they were coming into the finish. We saw Romain Bardet make a small gain, but the rider that profited most was Tadej Pogacar of UAE Team Emirates.
And Matt White and others expected that to be Roglic.
Well, it was the other Slovenian, Pogacar, who, of course, lost a minute and 21 yesterday, and he's gained back half of that deficit today. But it's fitting, really, because the stage was settled on the descent, wasn't it, by the AG2R La Mondiale rider, Nance Peters, or Nance Peters. I mean, I'm already asking you, Francois, why isn't it Nance Peters, if it's French?
Well, because, yeah, I mean, you know, so some...
You have no answer.
The problem is his parents were named Peters, whatever, or Peters, or whatever their origin. I know this guy's story. I know his background, but I don't know what his family comes from, or if his grandfather was Scot or German or just French. I mean, I don't know. Peters can be Swiss, can be German, can be
Dutch.
British, can be Dutch, can be Belgian. So I don't know his background back to his great grandfather. So I don't know. In French, it should be Nance Peters.
Well, Nance Peters of AG2R La Mondiale was named after a TV character in France.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Nance Le Berger, Nance the Shepherd, and shepherds. Some shepherds like mountains, don't they? They keep their flock up there.
It's with my brother when we were kids. It was like if we had been like didn't have good results at school, the punishment was to watch Nance Le Berger. It was one of the most boring. It was as boring as some of the first week. Maybe the long stage we found boring in the first week of the tour. Nance Le Berger was this kind of nothing was happening ever. You know, he was just a shepherd, you know, hanging around in the mountain, and he was in Provence, not far from my place. And actually, Nance Le Berger himself got his name from a small town close to Marseille called Nance-les-Pins. This is all the bit of cultural information you really don't need to know about, but there you are.
He wasn't a shepherd in charge of goats, was he? Because
it's a funny one. Yeah, I know why you're saying that. Should we come back to it later? Or
We can do. Yeah, I could just summarize the stage. Stage 8 from Cazères-sur-Garonne to Ludenvielle. And 141 kilometres, three major climbs on the way, the Col de Monte, the Port de Balès, the first all-category climb of the tour, and then the Périssaud at the end, a beautiful climb, both on the way up and on the way down. There was a big break at the start. Peters was in it, of course, along with Ilnur Zakarin of CCC. Tom Schuins was in there. Who else? Pascher, Paulus, Hermans, Verona, Crow Anderson, Cosnefroy, the King of the Mountains, Grillier, Reza, and Murku. Michael Morkoff, our diarist for De Koenig Quickstep, of course. And when we got to the Port de Balès, Jérôme Cousin was away on his own, wasn't he? And then it all switched round and it was Peters and Zakarin together. And on the descent of the Balès, that was when Peters dropped Zakarin. Zakarin made a good attempt to try and get back up to Peters on the Périssaud, but wasn't able to make it. And Nance Peters, who won a stage in the final week of the Giro, has now won a Tour de France stage. A huge victory for him and for AG2R La Mondiale. A good day also for his team leader, Romain Bardet, who was sprightly in the finish. You know, didn't gain any significant time, but looked like he had some legs.
After a crash as well.
I'm waiting for my turn to speak, but the good thing is when my turn to speak comes, I'm going to contradict everything you just said in many ways.
So it was a bad day for Romain Bardet.
The thing was, he attacked. I think out of nervousness, out of frustration, more than really looking for seconds, or maybe also boosted by the knowledge that Nance Peters had won the stage. But the first thing he said on the finish line when he crossed the line was, if you please, allow me to go back to my bus because I had a bad crash, my knee is hurting and I need to, to get treatment. So, mixed feelings for Bardet because, he attacked in the final stretch, grabbed a couple of seconds, is now in the top five overall. but in the same time, he crashed, I think, in Port de Balès, actually, and injured his knee. Always difficult to know, you know, beforehand, before the next morning, how bad it is. So, yeah.
So what you're saying is he attacked just to get back to the bus a bit quicker.
I need to get some ice on that knee quickly.
Yeah, no, so, mixed feelings for Bardet. We don't know. Maybe, you know, there's been so many crashes. Some are, you know, kind of harmless, and others can be, destructive, as we'll see later in the episode.
Well, if it was a bad day for Bardet, who's now up in the fourth, I think, overall, only 11 seconds off the yellow jersey, it was an absolutely terrible day for Thibaut Pinot. We can't put it any other way. He was dropped and finished over 19 minutes behind all of the other GC riders. His Tour de France as a GC contender, at least, is over. The omens weren't great, because his team captain, or road captain and kind of right-hand man, William Bonnet, pulled out of the race as well today. So a real shocker for Thibaut Pinot. Richard, as you said, there were skirmishes on the Périssoud. We saw all sorts going on, didn't we? Tom Dumoulin set an absolutely searing pace at the bottom of the climb. Then we saw Julian Alaphilippe, in the blink of an eye almost, accelerate and get away, and then all of a sudden be dropped off the back of the group, and he also has finished at many minutes down. The big move was by Tadej Pogacar, as we said. Roglic tried to react, Quintana reacted, Bernal was distanced for a little while. We saw Uran and Landa looking pretty strong, coming back up to the front group, and it really was like they were on strings today, kind of going forwards and backwards, no more so than Adam Yates, who drifted off the back and got back up to the group again. We saw Guillaume Martin making a little attack as well. And, well, the stage result was Nans Petters first, Tom Schuins of Trek Segafredo second, Carlos Verona of Movistar third, and Zakarin of CCC fourth. And then we had the GC riders come in. So Pogacar has gained 38 seconds on Bardet and 40 on all the other GC riders. The only GC riders not to be in that group were Enric Mas, Bauke Mollema and Richard Carapaz. They were 7:18 down on the winner. So what have they lost there? They've lost around 40 seconds to the other GC riders. Emmanuel Buchmann, fourth last year, and Esteban Chavez lost a bit more. Higuita, Valverde, Dumoulin and Barguil, about another minute more than that. And then Soler of Movistar, Alaphilippe and Pinot kind of bringing up the rear of the GC. So Adam Yates has another day in yellow, 3 seconds ahead of Roglic still. Peter Sagan is still in the green jersey, but Sam Bennett took a couple of points at the intermediate and has closed the gap down to 8 points where Sagan didn't score. Benoit Cosnefroy is still in the King of the Mountain jersey, but Petters is only 4 points behind, and Egan Bernal is in the white jersey. We also had a couple of abandons. Diego Rosa of Arkea Samsic is out, and he may have been a useful helper for Nairo Quintana.
Taken to hospital after hit. Taken to hospital after hitting one of these little walls on the roadside in a descent. I don't know if he. Well, we don't know the situation, but
well, hopefully he's okay. Lilian Calmejan, one of the local riders, also pulled out, and Giacomo Nizzolo of NTT Pro Cycling has withdrawn. He's been struggling with a leg injury for a few days, we gather.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a small business, find out more at iwoca.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, iWoca. Been with us since March. I'm very grateful to them for their support, allowing us to be here at the Tour de France, sitting in a hotel bar on the street, in the main street here in Luchon, with a jazz band playing next door. It's very nice. If you'd like more information on iWoca, it's at iwoca.co.uk. Now, today we're going to talk about Primoz Roglic and Jumbo Visma and whether they were winners or losers today. But first of all, the big loser was Thibaut Pinot, and Francois, you spoke to his sports director, Philippe Mauduit. We'll hear from him in a moment or two. But it's a familiar sight, isn't it? Almost an annual ritual. Not just with Pinot, but as we watched, as the cameras lingered on Pinot surrounded by all of his teammates, I thought back to few years ago when we had Arnaud Démare ill and in trouble, and that team seems to, it's very much a kind of cult of leadership on that team, and they really get behind their leader. And on that occasion, it was Démare, and he had all his sprint train around him, and they were all outside the time limit, and they were all kicked out of the race, and you wondered what the kind of point of that was. And today as well, you know, a couple of riders with Pino, if they're not injured and troubled by the crashes and so on, you wondered why they were, you know, he was beyond help at that point. Them surrounding him wasn't actually doing him any good at all, really. So it was odd. It felt a kind of, it felt like it was for the cameras, and it worked, but in the sense that the cameras were on them a lot.
You can also ask yourself the question why, you know, Jumbo Visma didn't kill the Tour today. We'll discuss that later. What Philippe Mauduit told me, he was not in the team when Arnaud Démare was surrounded by all of his teammates, and they got, you know, outside the limit, the time limit. But what we saw that day, you know, when Démare was surrounded by his teammates, the next year on the Tour, he won a stage in Pau, not far, well, where we'll be tomorrow at the start, and then it was kind of vindication of that day. And what Mauduit told me, he said, well, it's part of the culture of the team, like they all stick together as friends, almost family. And he said, and this kind of team spirit in the follow up to the Tour in the next 2 weeks will probably be the motivation they will find to go for stage wins, because they've stuck together, and you know, it's not. There is no real number two leader in this team, even though David Gaudu has always been, you know, pipped as a future, but he also crashed early in the Tour, so there was no question to ask David Gaudu to go to the front. But once again, well, we'll listen what Philippe Mauduit has to say. But obviously now their main objective is stage wins. All the team, he said, are in great shape. So Sebastian Reichenbach, we saw on the climb, was always talking to Pino, kind of, you know, really a caretaker of his leader, and he's in great shape. Rudy Mollard has always been a guy who can win a Tour de France stage. He won two stages in Paris-Nice in many big races. Gaudu is getting better and better, and Valentin Madouas, as we know from, you know, the past couple of seasons, is one of the up and coming talents. So yeah, I think it's all for stage wins now. I wouldn't be surprised if they do win one before the end of the Tour. What about Thibaut Pinot, are you going to ask me?
What about Thibaut Pinot?
Yeah, well, the luck for Thibaut Pinot, in a way, is that the rest day, I mean, we're Saturday, the Monday's rest day, so he will do his best tomorrow to finish in the Gruppetto, and hope for the rest day to you know, help him out, and hopefully for him, well, he'll manage to get, well, obviously the there might be echelons again, Ile de Ré, and all the stages will be treacherous, but Mauduit told me he was hoping that by the end of next week, maybe, you know, the pain will have eased, and then that Thibaut Pinot can go all the way in the Tour de France.
So do we know what's the matter with Pinot?
Back pain. Yeah, the thing was,
we saw him stretching his back a couple of times.
His crash on the first day was, you know, what Mauduit half-heartedly admitted is that, you know, they kind of concealed the seriousness of the injury to their rivals, even to the press. Because when I talked to Philippe Mauduit in Nice, he said, "Well, no, you know, it's nothing really serious." But actually, he said that Pino has been treated every day since with, you know, physiotherapists, painkillers. They've been trying lots of things, but actually, as we saw actually on TV, is the dejected face, you know, on TV, and then they played it down. The team played it down, saying, "No, no, he was just frustrated to blah blah blah." But in fact, he was in pain. He was really apparently seriously hurt in that crash. And once again, I mean, we you know, whether it's the Giro, whether it's the Tour de France, I mean, every time for. It's difficult to find reasons for that. You know, some guys do crash and have problems. Some guys don't. It's kind of their fate. I see it a little bit differently this year, because everybody's going to say, "Ah, oh, it's in the head." You know, he doesn't have the knack, you know, of the winner or something. But it did crash. He's in real pain. I mean, this guy is a champion. So I think the idea or the suggestion that he just doesn't have the mental strength to be a tour winner is a little bit an easy one. Hard luck for sure, but this time he really got hurt.
I mean, it's a catalogue of unfortunate events for Pino, though, isn't it? When you think about his grand tours, you know, he pulled out of a Giro with the effects of heat stroke, he banged his knee on the handlebars last year, you know, this year he's had his crash. He doesn't seem to be able to catch a break and just have a clean run at a grand tour too often, and the frustration is you don't know what he might be able to do. I mean, I said last night it seemed like everyone had kind of got through that first phase of racing and we might see them.
Well, the thing is we know what he's capable of doing. I mean, he was on the podium of the Tour once. He won the Tourmalet, he won l'Alpe d'Huez, he won the Giro de Lombardia. I mean, you know, a guy who is capable of this is obviously capable of more if the consistency is there, and it's this lack of consistency that's a problem.
But you do need everything to go right to win the Tour. It's unusual for somebody to overcome the injuries that you get in a crash. We've seen in this Tour, it's been a bit of a theme that we can see the effects of crashes on riders. You know, our own diarist, Pavel Sivakov, is a rider who would probably have been up there on today's stage, on his home roads, had he not crashed on day one. And it's been interesting getting that insight on a day-to-day basis of how you cope with, deal with quite serious injuries that affect your recovery and your ability to sleep and so on. Should we hear from Modui?
Of course.
So what's the future now, Philippe, for the team, for Thibaut? I mean, the immediate future in this Tour de France.
Well, you know, when you hear that Thibaut is a block and the bunch is not going super fast, and you say we are in the trap and we are close to the end, but you just try to find some words to help him breathing better, to help him focusing on something else, but just nothing helps. And when he gets drops, you know that it's the end of the day. But it's only the end of the day, it's not the end of the tour, you know? Mm-hmm. So actually, the boys are already looking up the roadbook when they will have a stage for each one which fits well. It means the spirit is good and the boys are still motivated and nobody is crying on that bus, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we are all disappointed because the team was going stronger and stronger and everybody was working hard, staff and riders including. But that's part of life and sports, you know.
Mm, absolutely. Do you think Thibaut can recover enough to do something before the end of the tour?
Honestly, I have no idea. Tomorrow will be a hard day again for him. And then we have a rest day. I hope that rest day will help. Then we have a hard stage in the crosswind in between the two islands.
Mm-hmm.
And then following day will be probably for him a recovery day again. And then from that point, we will be able to know if there are some hopes that he can perform good in the Alps or not. But for the other boys, they are still in the race and they can all have their own cards now. So
we
have the chance to be here in the Tour de France, you know. Mm-hmm. So, we're not going to lose that Tour de France without any try to win something.
That's right, yeah. We saw again, like we saw in the past with the Groupama FDJ, that the teams stuck together, remained together. There was no, you know, like only three or four guys around Thibaut. It was the whole team. Like they again rode like a team around Thibaut.
Yeah, that's really the spirit of that team, you know. Mm-hmm. These boys are looking for each other, are supporting each other, and when somebody is having a problem, then everybody tries to give his help. And I'm pretty confident for coming stages because was with that spirit, you know, we will every day help the better of them.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Our Tour de France coverage this year is sponsored by the next generation Watt Bike Atom. Lionel, you talked in an earlier episode about the electromagnetic resistance system and how it makes for even quicker, smoother gear changes, but today we're focusing on the overall ride feel. What is it like to ride the new Watt Bike on a regular basis?
Well, I'd say the smooth experience starts from the moment you switch it on, really, and start pairing it up with one of the third-party apps. I was switching from app to app each time I used it, so Zwift one day, Trainer Road the next, RGT the next. And each time the Watt Bike recognises the computer or your phone and you're hooked up and everything's ready to go pretty much as soon as you get in the saddle. So it's really easy to set up, and then the actual pedaling itself just feels like riding a really good quality road bike.
That's the tough bit.
getting on it and summoning up the willpower.
The pedaling, Lionel, that's supposed to be tough.
Well, summoning up my own personal willpower is the clunky bit, but once I'm actually pedaling, it feels like riding a really good road bike on smooth roads. And as I've said before in a previous episode, the gradient changes on Zwift or when you're doing an interval on Trainer Road, there isn't that sudden change. It's sort of subtle but swift. It's not like having a kind of windsock open up behind you and suddenly your legs lock up and you feel like you're pedaling through syrup. So it feels a lot more realistic, more like outdoor cycling. I also gather from talking to some of the other Watt bikers for this series that the combination of the resistance system and regular firmware updates mean that there'll be small but regular improvements to the feel continually, basically. So it's a sort of future-proofed product as well.
Well, if you want to ride as smoothly as Lionel and get the new next generation Watt Bike Atom, it's available now to buy from £90 per month from wattbike.com. That's wattbike.com. Francois, we should probably explain the goat reference from earlier.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's finish our little French corner by saying that actually at the finish line, Nance Peters was interviewed on French television, and he was asked if he was worried about Ilmur Zakarin, kind of coming back on him on the climbs, and he said, well, not really, because he said obviously he was a little bit stronger than me in the bumps. This was the words of Nance Peters. He said, but In the descent of the Port de Balès, I'd realise he was descending like a goat. So
it's a pretty good description, because he is quite goat-like, isn't he? He's quite angular and ungainly.
Goats are quite good descenders, though, aren't they? They can kind of walk sideways down very steep sections.
Not quickly, though.
That's right.
They don't
go as fast as a pudding, well, obviously.
I mean, exactly. But a pudding doesn't stop pudding when it gets to the bottom. That's the other thing. It smashes into a kind of a big, lardy mess.
If you compare a cyclist descending to a goat, I think that's flattering.
It's not flattering, of course.
To close down on the French corner, I mean, it was a bad day for Pinot, a mixed day for Bardet, a bad day again for Alaphilippe, who's not the flashy rider he was last year. But there's a really good surprise. I mean, we talked about it already. Guillaume Martin was there again on the attack a couple of times in this strange finale. He's still third overall. So, well, you know.
Well, I mean, absolutely. But we've got a new nickname for Ilmur Zakarin, which is good, the goat. we should look at the GC situation, because really that group behind Pogacar, I mean, let's not forget Pogacar would be in yellow tonight had he not been caught out in the crosswinds. Of course, that raises the question, would he have attacked today had he not lost that time in the crosswinds? Would they have
let him go?
Well,
the answer is no.
Did they let him go, or just could they not go with him? Because yeah, he's still a dangerous rider. He's not that far
away.
Very
dangerous rider.
And he's strong. And he went once and Roglic went with him. And when he went again, Roglic didn't go with him.
Yeah, but why?
That's
the main question of the day.
Yeah.
I was really puzzled. I got a little bit of criticism from listeners on Twitter when I said, you know, last night that nothing was going on in the first, well, nothing important taking place in the first week. What I meant is nothing important in the GC battle that happened. And again today, when, like Matt White, everybody was expecting the Persur to see the real battle for GC to take place. It actually didn't take place because today we saw Bernal was struggling. More than once he was dropped and had to fight back. Adam Yates say that he was in the same position, dropped, fought back to the front. Same with Mikel Landa, dropped, fought back to the front. But the thing, the very astonishing thing is, what were Jumbo-Visma doing? They led the way. They set a furious pace, and all of a sudden, when Roglic was supposed to you know bear the fatal blow to all these guys, and he, and my impression was that he could do it. You know, he could have really hurt Egan Bernal and all the other favorites had he decided to go beyond Pogacar and they decided to attack, but he stayed on the saddle.
What was amazing about that was that we saw Tom Dumoulin effectively sacrifice his overall chances for Roglic. And they were, at one point, coming into the race with three leaders, with Kruiswijk and Dumoulin and Roglic. And you thought that they were going to, you know, keep the three alive in the GC game. Kruiswijk obviously isn't here because he crashed at Dauphiné. But with Dumoulin and Roglic up there, those are two very dangerous cards to play. Dumoulin, when he went to the front, he really shredded it. You know, he reduced that group a lot, and he caused Adam Yates to lose contact at that point. But Roglic either couldn't or wouldn't capitalize on that. He didn't make the next move. And in the meantime, Dumoulin's lost 2 minutes 20. He's kind of drifting out of it. And George Bennett, who's always a very honest guy and was one of their last men today, at the finish, he said that that wasn't the plan, certainly not the plan for Dumoulin to lose that sort of time. So it's a very puzzling day. I mean, on the one hand, they had Wout van Aert, you know, looking incredible and sitting in the front, dropping climbers left, right and centre. He rode extremely well, but Sepp Kuss wasn't quite there. And again, well, maybe he's suffering from crash effects. We don't know.
The tricky thing with this is the same with Sky Ineos in the past. We've gone through this before, haven't we? Oh, Wout Poels is looking not very good. And then suddenly Wout Poels has two amazing days in the final week. And it becomes clear that they were kind of saving Poels for, you know, a particular days. And you just don't know the order of things. When Sepp Kuss dropped off, I was trying to tell from his body language, is he disappointed? Is he falling short here significantly? Or is his role today to do a bit there and then take it easy, and his chance or his role will come later in a day further on down the line? You know, Hessink looked like he did the textbook job that you would expect him to do. But the Dumoulin accelerations what were they achieving? Because it broke the group up, and then he popped, and then the group came back together again. And, well, the Perisord's not really hard enough to win the Tour. They could have put some people out the back door, and, of course, some people have conceded a bit of time. But I suppose we saw a little bit, didn't we? We saw Egan Bernal wasn't explosive enough to jump. You know, he wasn't in the first wave of riders to react, was he? We saw you know, even Landa and certainly Pogacar and Quintana as well look much more lively when it came to reacting to those moves by, when Roglic went after as well. So, you know, you get a few clues as to what the pecking order is, but whether those clues are backed up by what happens on the harder stages is, we'll have to wait and see. What I thought was interesting was Adam Yates, watching him and just thinking, is he just measuring an effort, knowing that he can get back on and not put himself into the red on the Perisord, get back on in time for the summit? And because we saw him looking pretty good on the run-in, the slightly uphill run-in to the finish. I mean,
At the end of the day, you know, Jumbo-Visma, well, Dumoulin's lost the Tour probably today, and Roglic hasn't won it yet. And Roglic has been looking to me like he's has been holding back since the start of the Tour. He kind of reluctantly won a stage and made sure he didn't get the jersey. Today again, we had that impression that the riders, of course, we're not in the saddle, of course, we're not in the bunch, and we can only trust our impressions. But clearly the strong men today looked Roglic, Pogacar, Quintana, and maybe Guillaume Martin, and the rest look a little bit, struggling a little bit. I've been asking myself for the last couple of days, are these guys worried about the third week effect? We know that the third week effect strikes very hardly and very heavily in normal conditions. But for guys who've been locked down for 2 months and 2.5 months, are they fearing that maybe if they do too much in the first week or in the first 2 weeks, they might suffer, the counter effect of that in the third week? I don't know. So for me, the basic question now at this stage of the tour is Roglic holding back, or is Roglic just, struggling a little bit? I mean, who knows?
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. And don't forget, you can get 25% off with the code SISCP25 at the website
scienceinsport.com. We've just finished fueling for the evening, haven't we? I've had a very large meal in that restaurant
fueling?
Over in,
yes.
in Luchon there across the road. I had the duck kebabs, brochette de canard, and it was very nice, but really only needed one kebab of duck rather than two. And one of the things about the Science in Sport products is that you're not bulking up when you eat them out on a ride. If you have something, a gel or a bar, they're light, but they deliver energy.
But I made a joke last night about whether they might introduce a downhill range.
A downhill range of duck gels
just butter.
the butter gels.
Butter gels.
Wonderful.
For getting downhill quicker. Anyway.
But it's an important point, isn't it? When you're fueling, and I imagine when you're racing or going hard, you don't want to suddenly fill up. You want to get the energy, but without... filling up. So there must be quite a lot of work goes into delivering that nutrition efficiently.
Absolutely. Well, we've moved location. We're now we're actually at the spot where in 1986, on his very first day on the Tour de France, a young reporter, cub reporter, if you can call him that, a young Francois Thomazeau, was assaulted on this very spot by Bernardino, who was in the yellow jersey.
I was not even a reporter as such, you have a press card in France when you're entitled to become a real reporter. I was almost still a trainee, and I was sent to cover the tour out of the blue by Reuters at the time, because the rival news agency AFP were on strike, very French, and so they sent me to I took a plane down to Pau, I think. Then managed my way to Luchon by taxi, whatever it was, and when I got to Luchon, I remember it very well. I've told the story many times, but anyway, I came into the press room, bumped into the guy in charge of the press, a young guy with long hair called Philippe Sud. He's now the head of communications for ASO. He has no hair left, as far as I can tell. We're still good friends, and he said, "Well, you're not a qualified reporter, so here's a badge," and I had a technician badge. Like I was allowed into very sparse areas, like COVID restrictions before that time. And well, anyways, the next day, classic historical stage up Super Bagnères with
I think maybe the last time it went up Super Bagnères.
I think
possibly.
So. I can't think of any other one. As we know, that tour was about the big battle between Bernardino and Greg LeMond. A friend of mine wrote a great book about that Tour de France. And,
really? What's that? What's it called?
I think it's called Slain the Badger or something.
There
might have been a film about
starring
it.
Starring Francois Thomas.
yeah, probably. Maybe. And anyways, it was my first day on the tour, my first covering the Tour de France. I had to write a story very quickly in the press room. And then everybody had gone to the line, but working for a news agency, I needed to take out a few hundred words about the day stage. And then when I saw everybody had gone, I told myself I must rush to the finish line and talk to riders. So I rushed out of the press room and I went down a kind of slope, and I found myself on the road there. And all of a sudden, I saw a rider coming you know, in my direction. I was facing, you know, a rider. And what rider it was? It was a man in a yellow jersey, a French guy called Bernard Hinault. And so I kind of, you know, ran towards him, and he was riding towards me, and I was shouting, "Bernard, Bernard!" Like, you know, he would stop. And he saw me coming to his way. It just shoved me away, and I almost fell over. And that was my first interview on the Tour de France.
He landed on this very spot where we're sitting now.
Just a point of order, the Tour also finished at Super Bagnères in 1989, of course, when Robert Miller, now Philippe Yort,
absolutely
won the stage.
True. I was there.
A friend of ours wrote a book about Robert Miller's career as well. I don't know who that was.
If I can rescue myself, Pedro Delgado was second and Charlie Motti was third.
That's right.
Yes.
And I think Fignon took the jersey from Greg LeMond that afternoon. Mm.
In 1989, actually, if somebody can really tell me, well, you know, tell the whole story of 1989 and which days Greg was in the yellow jersey and which day Laurent was in the yellow jersey,
that's a fun game for a car journey.
Pedro
Delgado that day was trying to do what Tadej Pogacar was trying to do today, and we asked earlier whether he would have attacked. I mean, what today confirmed was that he is in fantastic form, and that 1:20 that he lost is probably, it might not matter overall because he's clearly in great form. Today, I mean, the really significant thing today, I mentioned it already, was Tom Dumoulin, and he made a decision today to not keep himself in the hunt for GC, and he's spoken to Dutch journalists after the stage and told them that on the Port de Balès he just didn't feel like he had the legs and that he didn't feel that he was in the sort of form that might win him the Tour de France, and so he effectively sacrificed himself for Roglic today. And I don't think Roglic then delivered on that sacrifice. I don't think he then was able to, or maybe he's thinking conservatively. There is still a long, long way to go. I think it was a fascinating stage because there are still so many riders up there in contention. Egan Bernal hasn't looked great, you know, but he didn't look great at this point last year. You know, in the Pyrenees he struggled and he lost time. He looks kind of the same, so I wouldn't write him off at all. But yeah, Pogacar is the big threat, I think.
I think the most fascinating thing about what we've seen so far is we've seen Jumbo-Visma dominate on the uphills in numbers. We've seen Ineos Grenadiers kind of trying to challenge them at you know, some moments, but stepping back at others, perhaps because they're not able to or it's the wrong point in the race. But as we're sitting here tonight after 8 stages with one more stage in the Pyrenees to go, the top 13 are all from different teams. And the whole talk was about how Jumbo-Visma were going to swarm all over everybody with maybe 2, 3, possibly 4 riders in contention overall. And while it doesn't necessarily matter that they're not all up there in the GC, it does completely alter the complexion of the picture if they're not all within striking distance of the lead. It changes how the race will be ridden because they're no longer, a lot of them are no longer threats. I mean, Tom Dumoulin may still be a threat, but coming from quite a long way back at this point. And so the fact that we came into this tour anticipating this great battle between maybe Ineos and Jumbo-Visma having 2, possibly 3 riders that they could go with, we're down to kind of 1v1v1 across a number of teams. In fact, Trek Segafredo are the only team, you know, they're the first team to have 2 riders on GC, admittedly in 13th and 14th position. So they're kind of, you know, bringing up the rear in the GC battle. But I think that's a significant change to how we anticipated in advance the race might be run.
We're going to Pau tomorrow, and the stage starts in Pau tomorrow, and it'll be, of course, a time to remember Nicolas Portal, who lived in Pau. And maybe, in a way, what we're seeing now is a kind of a, you know, tribute to Nicolas Portal's vision and the way he was, you know, reading the race and planning the Team Sky and Team Ineos, Tour de France racing in the past, because there was a kind of a readability in what Team Sky were doing at the time. They looked always in control, and you could tell you could tell what they were doing, and it was always at least 2 riders in the top 10 with Team Sky at the time. With Jumbo-Visma, We thought we knew what their strengths were, and we thought they would kind of dominate the race the way Team Scout Timini was used to, and you know, at the end of the first week of the Tour de France, their tactics look much well, not as clear, and dominance is not that. And maybe, who knows? Maybe what they're missing is a Nicolas Portal in the team management. Because at times you have the impression Roglic and Dumoulin and other guys, I mean, the Sepp Kuss or even Wout van Aert, lack direction in a way.
I think it's experience as well, isn't it? And I think we see that in Roglic. You know, there's a lot of pressure on Roglic. He's probably the favourite for the Tour, but he's not been in this position before, and he has been in a position when he's come into Grand Tour in great form, and then that form has diminished, and it has looked to me from the start he's throttling back all the time, and maybe he was today as well, so as not to not to make the mistake, I suppose, that Simon Yates made at the Giro as well a couple of years ago, to go too deep too soon and to save something for the end. And I think that's probably in his thoughts, but I agree. I mean, controlling the race in the way that we've seen Sky do, and we saw them do many years, it's not a simple thing. And as you say, Francois, the guy in the car for a lot of those tours was Nicolas Portal. And in fact, our episode of Kilometer Zero on Monday will be a bit of a tribute to Nicolas Portal. We've got various people remembering him. And one of the things that Dave Brailsford says in that episode is that one of his great qualities was patience and waiting. It looked to me today like Jumbo Visma were maybe a little bit too eager. And Wout van Aert went really hard, and then Tom Dumoulin went really hard, but in doing so left Roglic on his own with still like 10 other riders.
How bad do we think Dumoulin could have been if he was riding in that group? All right, he might not have thought, I can do anything today, or I can, he wasn't going to attack, or, maybe he would have been distanced towards the top. We don't know. But to basically burn himself out, making that effort, shredding the group, to temporarily shredding the group, and then getting dropped himself, surely that, if you were a sports director, you would be saying, look, if you don't feel great today, just let's all sit in here and exercise exactly that patience.
You know, he did get rid of guys who then got back on when he swung off.
Absolutely.
And so his sacrifice seems to have been, and had he not been in the team with Primoz Roglic, had he been leading somewhere, so he'd have ridden a completely different race today and still been in contention.
Another factor, maybe, as we know from the past with Team Sky Team Ineos, is that then maybe the level of riding, the intensity, the watts, as they say these days, were so high that actually all the guys who tried to attack went over the limit, and it was maybe impossible to really attack. Even for Roglic, because the pace was too high. I've just seen figures from Antoine Vallée, so they're disputable. We know that Antoine Vallée is the French guy who is measuring the times and the watts of every single riders on the climbs, and drawing conclusions that are disputable about their
credibility.
The credibility. And according to Vallée, Pogacar rode the fastest ever Pursuit climb today, so I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, but it, in any case, it shows whatever you think of it, that probably the pace up Pursuit today was so high that all the tactics and the strategy and all tactical plans were out out of order because the pace was higher than what we think by discussing it here.
We haven't mentioned him at all, but Superman Miguel Angel Lopez rode extremely well today without us really noticing him. Guillaume Martin rode very well, another good day for him. And Nairo Quintana looked good, and Rigoberto Urán looked really good as well.
Well, the Tour de Colombie is now, I think they're all lined up again. They were spaced out one by one the other day, alternate places. Now, they're all in a line in the GC.
Together.
Just before we go, you mentioned Pogacar. Obviously, he was riding on his own through the crowds on the Paris-Sword, and we can't really go without commenting, I guess, on how that looked, because at one point Pogacar waved his arm at the spectators to get back, and certainly from the pictures we saw on TV, and they're obviously made to look worse when people screen grab them. A lot of the fans that were getting closest to the riders weren't wearing masks, and we know the Tour de France has made it mandatory for spectators on the climbs to wear masks. Francois, you were saying that there's been a TV advertising campaign featuring Thibaut Pinot urging people to wear masks if they're coming out to watch the Tour de France, and we didn't see that being universally observed this afternoon. And there was a little bit of disquiet from people watching, suggesting that stepping close, you know, within a foot or two or within a meter of the riders and yelling encouragement at them, possibly not the thing to be doing during a pandemic.
There are a lot of measures in place to prevent us journalists getting too close to the riders, and indeed everybody else. And it seems a bit weird when you've got, you know, members of the public, you know, basically getting very close and shouting in their faces. I don't know how you control that, but it shows how uncontrollable it is in a way, and that some of the rules that we're all abiding by seem a little bit pointless if that's going to happen.
I mean, the crowds on the Port de Balès were really, really small by Tour de France standards, weren't they? Obviously, on the Périssaud being the last climb, they were a lot bigger, and it looked more like the regular Tour de France, albeit with probably 80 or 90% of people wearing masks. But it's more for appearances than anything else, I think. You know, politically, the Tour de France has to be seen to be doing the right thing, as well as, you know, all the measures that have been put in place are to reduce risk rather than eliminate it entirely. And Richard, you said before the Tour, you didn't think that the Tour would be responsible for creating any spikes in coronavirus cases. But I do think that Monday is going to be a critical day, with everyone in the peloton and all of the team staff being tested for coronavirus, and those results will determine whether any teams have to go home. If there are two or more positive tests in any one team, they will be asked to leave the race.
We could be
significant.
We might not be talking about the race at all come Monday night, Tuesday. I was speaking to Matt White this morning, who said that they're being tested Sunday morning, actually very early tomorrow morning. So the tests are happening over Sunday and Monday, I believe, and they'll get the results within 24 hours. So, from Tuesday, we could be talking about something else entirely. Should we hear from a couple of our audio diarists just before we go? We were hoping to hear from Pavel Sivakov, but we'll hear from him in Kilometre Zero next week, because these were his local roads today. There's a lot of support for him out today. His name was written on the road all the way up the Port de Balès. But let's hear from Michael Morkov, who was in the breakaway, and also Simon Geschke, former stage winner, of course, at the Tour de France. So first Michael Morkov and then Simon Geschke.
Today I ended up in the breakaway. It wasn't really the purpose with the stage, but in the start I tried to manage not a bigger group would be going away. And I was chasing eight riders when the peloton stopped behind. And then I unluckily ended up in the breakaway. So couldn't really do much about that. Afterwards enjoyed my day there in the wheel. There was not much point for me to be working or pulling in that group, because we would have Sam behind, who would like to take points for the intermediate, and at the same time we'd like to keep the stage open for Julian. So there was absolutely no point of me pulling in that group, so I just hang on with the purpose to maybe pass one of the first climbs, and then possibly being able to help Julian in the final. So yeah, that was basically my day, but it turned out quite well and we got a good gap, so I could take it quite easy.
The Cycling Podcast Audio Diaries. Simon Geschke, CCC team.
Hello everyone. This weekend, first mountain stages in the Pyrenees. Never easy, very demanding stages. Today was the day for the breakaway. We were happy with our guy Ilno Sakarin in the break. Unfortunately, no stage win yet, but we're working on it.
The Pyrenees this year, the stages are finishing with the descent, which is special, of course. Well, not really special, but I was a bit surprised to see that there will be no mountaintop finish this weekend. But yeah, in the end, you could see today that it was a very exciting final, and that also a lot of GC favorites lost some time today, like Tom Dumoulin, Emmanuel Buchmann, Pogačar gained some time again. And yeah, I think it was very exciting also with the downhill finish, where you would think that the favorites would maybe not trying anything funny on the last climb. But yeah, today was definitely a GC day, and I think it was a very nice stage to watch. I obviously didn't watch it, but that's what I heard. And yeah, I also think that if you want to win the Tour de France, you have to have certain downhill skills. It's not always about just raw power and pushing the watts per kilo. Otherwise, we could also just stay at home and do it on Zwift. So yeah, I think technique and also descending skills is definitely something that if you want to be a complete GC rider, you have to manage very well. And yeah, don't get dropped in the descents. But yeah, everyone stayed on their bikes today of the GC favorites. And yeah, I'm looking forward to see how tomorrow will be. But yeah, today was already a great stage, I think. And yeah, I think the Tour de France is was never that open today like this year. There's no clear favorite for me yet. And yeah, it's still a long way to go. So I hope everyone looks forward to the next 2 weeks.
Well, it was Michael Morkov and then Simon Geschke. We should wrap things up for tonight. We're heading to Po in the morning for the start, and then to La Rochelle.
Indeed.
For the resumption of the race on Tuesday. So thank you very much.
Are we going to be tested? I mean, the riders are going to be.
But we're not. No.
Well, no. Who knows? You know.
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, I rode a bit up the Perisord tonight on my bike against the crowds coming down. So I turned around and came back and went up Super Bagnères instead, not all the way. You would have loved the descent, Lionel.
Oh, I would have done. I would have done.
You'd have been bombing down there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking
forward to your name written all over it. Not this year, but maybe next year. Thanks, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Merci.